Excuse me. Excuse me, sir. Could you help me? I'm trying to find this place called Care Seaveen, and it seems that every road I take just seems to lead me right back here. Can you give me directions? Ah, sure, of course I can, no. You are going to Care Seaveen, is it? Care Seaveen is what we call it. Anyone who's asked for directions in Ireland before will know that we have a tendency to tell people where not to go before we tell them where to go. Well, now, all you need to do is go down the road here now. Keep going straight. And as you go down the road now, you'll see a rock. And the rock will have Care Seaveen on it. I'm sure you've seen that. You have. And so that's the rock that'll direct you to the road to the left to take to Care Seaveen. But don't take that road. That's not the road that'll take you there. That's the road that'll take you down now to the Care Seaveen pub. You can take it if you want, of course. You'll get a good pint of Guinness in the Care Seaveen pub. But if you want Care Seaveen itself now, you don't take that road. So go on down past that rock. Keep going down straight. Keep going down straight. And you'll come to a roundabout. At that roundabout then, you'll see there are three different roads off it. One to the left, one to the right, and one going straight. And you'll see, of course, then, on the left, you can take the left road if you like, and that'll bring you down the scenic route to go out there to Care Seaveen. Or if you want to take the more direct route, oh, you do. You want to take the more direct route, right. So to take the more direct route, just keep going down now, straight through that roundabout, pass through the roundabout, keep going on down, and you'll see a bush on the right-hand side. It'll have a wee side road on it. Don't go down that road. Keep going straight. And eventually then, as you keep going down straight, you'll come to a field on the right-hand side. And that big field on the right-hand side, now there might be something on it, there might be a bit of thrashing going on, or there might be a wee local festival or something. You see that, you see a few people sitting up in the wall at the field, then you'll know you've hit Care Seaveen. Just keep going on straight a little bit more now, and you'll reach the village. So there you are. It's important that we feel like you have a choice of which direction you want to go and you want to take, and that you know the different possibilities that you'll come across as you're going down the road. We also don't want you to get lost. So that's why we give you all the possibilities and we tell you not to take them. Often, people feel lost. When I was waking up today, I had this lost, tired feeling. It's a Thursday morning. And on Thursdays, I tend to be quite tired because on Mondays and Wednesdays, I have 2 17-hour days. And on Tuesdays, I have a lot of client sessions. So I give a lot of my time and my energy. But then Thursday hits and it's podcast day and it's article writing day and I still have to produce a lot of output. But I woke up the last couple of Thursdays feeling tired. This morning was no different. Now I have a lot of self-compassion and I self-check to see what's going on with my states. I'm very aware of the different states that I can get into. But sometimes the mind takes over a little bit and it takes me a little bit longer than I would like it to take to be able to pull myself out of the state. On Wednesday this week, which is yesterday at the time of recording, I was listening to the Blind Boy podcast. And it's unusual that I'd listen to it on a Wednesday. Normally I cook my dinner to it on a Friday night. A part of me wishes I'd never started listening to him because a lot of what I think and do is similar. And the ugly voice inside my head says, oh, people will think I'm trying to copy him. But then I have to self-check and shut, firstly, my ego up, thinking I might be considered at a level that he's at. And also because, well, you know, honestly, we do have a lot of similar interests and we get excited about similar things. And my sister for months went on and on at me about listening to him. I'd actually talked about him in a LinkedIn live. Well, not about him, but about the preamble that he did for T.P. Dolan's Hiberno English Dictionary. Long before I ever knew anything about his podcast. And I loved what he said about the rhythm and beats and drums of the Hiberno English language and how we speak. But my sister kept on and on at me to listen to him. And I didn't and I didn't and I didn't. And then at the end of last year, I stuck him on. And I realised the reason that she kept at me to listen to him was because she knows me so well and she knew how similar my thinking was. And that's okay. So anyway, he's great and I love his stuff. And listening to him for the last few months has definitely both spurred on ideas I already had and inspired new and alternative thinking on other aspects. He gave me the final piece of the puzzle on how I can turn what I do into a pay it forward model. And his down-to-earth, honest vulnerability about his journey is inspirational. Now, I don't want this to sound like some sort of sycophancy. It's not. It just happened to fit into a series of inspirational events, which led me to make this podcast episode this week. I've been sitting on it for a few months, but I knew it'd find its way out in the end. Everything always finds its destination. There are no coincidences. Yesterday, one of my connections on LinkedIn, who I chat to quite a lot in Sweden, commented on the April weather in a message to me. And I told him then about Blind Boy's podcast about March bullying April. Then I sent it to him. There was no other way for him to be able to understand. They were fighting, you see, March and April, Blind Boy tells us, in his unique way to deliver stories. Because March's sense of identity had been affected. Now, I'm not going to retell the story. I definitely couldn't do it in the way that he does. So go and listen to it and come back to this episode if you want. But he went on to talk about how things can affect us, annoy us or upset us, if we allow ourselves to get lost in negative thoughts. So this morning, my energy was low. And when I got up after I did my journey and my meditation, I started thinking about the ebb and flow. Wednesdays being my 17-hour days, how much I give of myself and my time in those hours because of the teaching I do, and understanding that because of all that giving, I need to receive. So I was in my room, feeling what I was feeling, chatting to myself about this, and then I said, you know, Christine, just be kind to yourself. You give a lot on Mondays and Wednesdays and on Tuesday this week. You need to receive a bit. Let go. Let yourself just have the morning whatever way you need to have the morning. And then I walked out of my bedroom and I have an altar type thing with a calendar on the side of it that has these different quotes. And I turned the calendar for today, April 4th. Well, it's now the 5th as I record. The calendar said, let us follow our destiny, ebb and flow. Whatever may happen, we master fortune by accepting it. And I laughed, and I went into the kitchen, letting go, and I made my coffee. And as I was making my coffee, I was thinking about my thinking and the fact that I'm a linear thinker and I have all these things that I have to do this morning. And yesterday I was teaching and I like to go with the flow and when I teach, and I had this new guy come in and try the class, and I thought at the beginning of it, he is not going to understand that in these advanced type classes, I tend to just go with the flow of what the students want. And I wondered then if maybe I had just learned to be a linear thinker. That actually, when I self-check and I think about making content, for instance, why every time I've tried to plan making content, I get stuck, I get blocked. And why I seem not to be able to set a linear calendar or a linear flow for things to get them done. I can make lists of things that I need to get done for sure. But if I try to block them into a day and get them all done in this linear pattern, it doesn't work for me. Well, whenever I release myself and I just say, okay, they're the things I need to get done, I get them done in the day. There's this fellow called Tony DeMello who wrote a book called Awareness. Well, he didn't write the book actually. The book was written by the nuns who used to travel with him, and he used to go around speaking. And so they wrote this book based on a lot of his speaking events and recordings that he'd made in his life. And he tells the story of Tran Shu, a great Chinese sage. And the story goes, when the archer shoots for no particular prize, he has all his skills. When he shoots to win a brass buckle, he's already nervous. When he shoots for a gold prize, he goes blind, sees two targets and is out of his mind. His skill has not changed, but the prize divides him. He cares. He thinks more of winning than of shooting, and the need to win drains him of power. Isn't that an image of what most people are? DeMello says. When you're living for nothing, you've got all your skills, you've got all your energy, you're relaxed. You don't care. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose. When we release to acceptance, it doesn't matter if we win or lose. And this is where the idea of this podcast episode comes from. The idea of losing. I was chatting with somebody on Instagram the other day and they asked me what I did and I told them what I did and I said, what about you? What do you do? And they came back and said that they were a little lost right now. They'd give me an answer to that in a week or so. So I asked them if I could ask a question and they said, yeah. And my question was, how do you perceive feeling lost? And a few months back, I met someone else online who told me they had to lose themselves to find themselves. We go back to DeMello again here because a couple of days after I met this guy, I picked up DeMello's book. Now, it's funny that I should be quoting DeMello, right? And if my sisters are listening to this podcast, they're going to be like, seriously, Christine? Because my dad quoted DeMello most of our childhood. And I mean, I remember looking at dad going, will you shut the fuck up, dad? Seriously, I'm done with listening to the words of this fella. That's enough. But clearly my awareness wasn't ready for him yet. Interestingly enough, he died just before he was about to go on a massive tour in the US and spread the word of awareness. More interestingly, incidentally, but not coincidentally, the day he died was the day I was born, but 4 years after it. So I keep his book Awareness on the couch beside me. Sometimes it comes into my room, sometimes it comes out to another couch. I haven't finished it yet. I've been reading it for 2 years, but it's one of those things that you keep going into and then you see something new. And I've written all over them, circled things and squared them. It walked the Camino with me. As I flicked it open on that day after meeting this fella, I landed on the page that says, let's get back to that marvellous sentence in the gospel about losing oneself in order to find oneself. One finds it in most religious literature and in all religious and spiritual and mystical literature. How does one lose oneself? Did you ever try to lose something? That's right. The harder you try, the harder it gets. It's when you're not trying that you lose things. You lose something when you're not aware. To lose oneself, he goes on to say, is to suddenly realize that you are something other than what you thought you were. I've had a bit of a battle over the last few years. If you've been following or listening to my content here or on any other channels, you'll know that I was in a shitty relationship and a lot of my confidence was lost. And I kept hearing this idea of being lost and losing the self. And I was almost convinced to say I lost myself in my relationship. I might even have said it once or twice. But inside, I never felt it. Inside, I always knew I was there. I just wasn't acting in the ways that I was typically used to acting. I also wasn't acting in the ways that I act now. You can't lose something that you've never had. And I was never the me that I am now. I do these things called days of no direction. On Wednesday, last week, or yesterday at the time I'm recording this, while I was going from one place to the next, I was thinking that I needed one. I constantly have something I need to get done these days. And I'm not good with having that feeling all the time. I need to feel a sense of I'll do whatever the fuck I feel like doing. Or at least give myself that feeling. But today I needed to write an article, prepare my podcast and prepare next week's podcast because I'm going to Ireland for an MRI and I won't be able to get it ready. And I was getting up feeling lethargic and low on fuel. But then I surrendered into that acceptance. I let go of purpose or intention. I decided I'd do nothing until I felt like it. And then I remembered the Dutch concept of niksen, which happened to show up on my feed a few months back after I told someone about days of no direction. It's become quite a popular concept, it seems. Doing nothing with no purpose is a thing. Now, whether or not there is actually no purpose is arguable, because if the purpose is to do nothing, then there's a purpose. It's a bit like the Spanish double negative in English. No hice nada. I didn't do nothing. Well, you know, if you didn't do nothing, then you had to have done something. I always tell people. So I was sitting on the couch, purposely doing nothing this morning, in the sun, drinking my coffee cacao blend after getting permission from the cacao to try them together. It was fabulous. You wouldn't drink it all the time, but I needed it this morning. And I can't remember how it happened, but suddenly I was writing the bullet points out for this episode on a post-it and looking up the word lost. Then I was thinking about things like losing your virginity and wondering where that phrase comes from and realising I'd need to look up the etymology of the word, which is quite fascinating. Lost means, according to Oxford, not knowing one's whereabouts or being able to find one's way. And it means something taken away or that cannot be recovered. The etymology is long and varied, but it's interestingly got little or nothing to do with how we presently perceive being lost, or how society would like us to understand the concept. Understanding of concepts and words can be quite personal. The meaning of words change over time, but they tend not to be questioned. We have a tendency to think, oh, that's the meaning of the word, that's what the word means. But when we look at the etymology of words, we find out something different. The transitive meaning of losing something, money, hair, so transitive being a verb that needs an object. So losing money, losing hair, losing virginity, losing sleep, losing one's mind, comes from the loose connection between a weak word from Old English in the Middle Ages. Lisi, I think is how it's pronounced, I'm not sure. I actually know somebody who I think can read Middle English, so I might ask him. No, Old English even. So it comes from this weak word, lisi, and a stronger verb, lusan, I would say it's probably pronounced, whose past participle, which is the third form, loren, survives today in the word forlorn and in the word lovelorn. And they go back to the 1200s. To be lovelorn is to be pining for love. It's first perceived in Milton's work, apparently. Then later, in the 1500s, we start to see phrases related to losing aspects of the self emerge. From 1744, there's lost heart, to lose one's heart, or fall in love, from the 1630s. To lose one's mind, from the 1500s. And to lose it, or lose control of oneself, emerged in the 1990s. What's even more interesting there is that there was a sharp increase in the frequency of the use of the word lost from about the mid-1990s right up to 2019, pre-pandemic. That's shown on an engram, which the site does say are probably unreliable, but your Google shows us them nonetheless. These days, unreliable information is everywhere. That's why we have to start relying on ourselves to query it. And this includes querying the meaning we attach to words and phrases like getting lost. That makes sense that it had spiked in 2019. People's freedom was lost. People's choices were lost. People suddenly had no set schedules and realised, maybe subconsciously, that they didn't actually direct their lives. Suddenly, they started feeling very lost. At the beginning. But over time, people started to set their own sense of direction, and the meaning that they gave to the feeling changed. We can change the meaning we give to things. My meaning versus your meaning is very different. I love how all these things tie together. Yesterday evening, I was teaching a class, and as I think I mentioned before, a new guy came in to try it out. And we were talking about modals of deduction and speculation in English, where you look at things, oh, it must be this, or it must be that, or it can't be this, or it could be that. And we talked about possibility and impossibility. As I was explaining something, he sat in the class and he just went, oh yes, and the people who say anything's possible. And if you could imagine the way my body might have moved there and my face, it's like that derision, as if to say, it's ridiculous. Now, if you're listening to this at some point in the future and you recognise that that's you, there's absolutely no problem with that having happened in the class. We all have our own meaning to think for things. But it was brilliant because my response to him was able to be, well, you know, I'm one of those people who does think anything is possible. Even if something turns out to not be possible, it doesn't mean that I can't perceive its possibility. And something that you deem impossible may only be impossible because you have never experienced or perceived it before. And when I explained to you how to do it, you suddenly realize that it's possible. He nodded his head in a fair enough kind of gesture. Meaning is attached to words, which then results in the creation of concepts. But de Mello goes on to tell us that the moment we put things into a concept, they stop flowing. They become static or dead. A frozen wave is not a wave. Once a wave freezes, it's no longer a wave. Waves move. Concepts are always frozen. Reality moves. Reality is whole. Words and concepts fragment reality. Again, there are no coincidences, but it's amazing how all these things tie together. The concept of Nixon, my Dutch client. But he often says to me, I just click my heels and go home. Dorothy clicked her heels and said, there's no place like home. But where is home? Ní linn tin tán mar de hin tán féin. A phrase that used to be inscribed on matchboxes all over Ireland. The matches that were used to light the fire in the home. There's no hearth like your own hearth. There's no place like home. But where is home? Mi casa es su casa. My house is your house, or my home is your home. But what home is that? And does home have the same significance in reality across languages? Words can't give you reality, de Mello tells us. You use them as pointers to get to reality. Today I was writing a LinkedIn article. Yes, I did get the LinkedIn article written. It was about articulation. And one of the parts in it, I was talking about the importance of consonants in articulation. So I gave a little example of something. What is the sentence that I'm saying? E, I, I, a, I, u, a, a, I. Any idea? You've maybe seen the article. If you have, you know what the sentence is. But if you haven't, you've got no context. You've just heard sounds. Now let me give you the words. Get six people into a taxi. Now, you know what I mean. Well, you know what I mean if you've heard of or seen a taxi before. But would you have any idea of what it was if you'd never seen a taxi before? When I was living in China back in 2010, in the first week or so that I was there, I was in a supermarket with my bosses, and they had these hoovers that you put on the ground and they go round the room on by themselves on a sensor. We didn't have them in Ireland in 2010. I tend not to regret things, but that's one of the ideas I regret not putting into practice. I'd be a multimillionaire by now. I thought I should import them to Ireland. Then one day my granny had one in her living room. The concept became typical in Ireland, but only after they were imported and everybody got a sense of what they were. Our reality is based on our sense. When I was first learning speech and drama, the initial pause that you learn is the sense pause. And this is another one of these things that's etched into my brain forever. A sense pause is a stop to take a breath and make sense of what you're saying. It is usually indicated by punctuation, but always be guided by the sense. Always be guided by the sense. What sense? Where does that sense come from? Life sense is either directed by us or it takes on a direction of its own. And that direction will often be led by another, unless we calibrate our inner compass and find our own sense of direction. Has anyone ever told you that they have an awful sense of direction? That they can't find their way from left to right? Or, as we might say in Ireland, they can't find their arse from their elbow. They don't have an inner GPS that they trust. They fear getting lost. They fear not being able to find their way to success, to glory, to achievement, to the top of the class, to the front of the line, to the money, the riches, the wealth, the whatever it is society has taught them they need to achieve. They stop trusting themselves and they externalize trust. They live on the other side of fear. And I realize there, I say they, we, you, us, they, them, people, many. I've lived this. I talk about it because I've lived it. I've experienced it and I understand it for myself with my own reality, my own concept and my own meaning. Another podcaster that I loved and I haven't listened to in ages, but his words and podcast I still recommend to many people because I listened to it on repeat as I was finding my way through my fear a couple of years ago, is Jim Fortin. And that's the name of the podcast. It's the Jim Fortin podcast. Episode 6 or 7, I think, is the one that I recommend to people. But he says, everything you want is on the other side of your fear. And he's right. When we step through the veil of fear, we find freedom. Now that sounds fucking really cliche, I know, okay? I don't mean it to. But what I'm trying to get at is that getting comfortable getting lost allows us to start trusting ourselves again, to find and recalibrate our compass, our own inner GPS. If we don't do that, others will feed our fear and they will fill their pockets in the process. And again, I've lived that experience. I've had my fear fed with a big fucking spoon and another person's pockets chock filled with my money. To get comfortable getting lost means doing a couple of different things, which do require a bit of purpose and a bit of intention. At times we need to veto our fear. To learn about the veto principle in a bit more detail, go back a few episodes. I think it was the identity episode or something. It's around those ones. You'll see in the show notes when I talk about vetoing. But to veto the brain means to stop the brain from going into a habitual moment and movement and instead choose which direction to take it. We can do that. We can veto our fear. We can veto our thinking and choose which way to turn our thinking or turn our thoughts. Or we can heed our instincts. We can release the outcome and go on a day of no direction. So I love a day of no direction. And people say to me, what are you talking about? What do you mean a day of no direction? Now, this is how you do Nixon, in my view, right? Because as I said, and now see again, I'm actually going to contradict myself because when you have a day of no direction, your purpose is still not to have any direction. So there's still a purpose there. But anyway, a day of no direction means that you get up without any decision on what you're going to do, where you're going to go, and how you're going to lead it. So for me, when I go to new cities, for example, I go on days of no direction. I get up. I make sure that I have my address, right? So be safe about these things, especially if you're in new cities and you're not used to traveling. You make sure that you have your address or where you're staying written on a piece of paper, or you have a business card for the location, not just saved on your phone, please, because if your phone goes dead, then you can't find your way back. So make sure that you've got it written down on a piece of paper and you know a central point or somewhere that you'll be able to find your way to, just in case you do get completely lost, which is the whole goal of a day of no direction. Then you walk outside and you turn whatever way you want. This is how you learn to trust your insides and trust your body. I want to go left or right. Which way? Oh, there we go. And you'll find that your core, your solar plexus will actually pull you in a certain direction. It's the compass. So off you go. Now, oddly enough, when I do this, I tend to find old graveyards. In Geneva, for example, I walked out of my Airbnb and off I went. As I was walking, this tiny little street pulled me down it. And then there was a tiny little archway through it. Tiny little gate. And I say tiny little, it wasn't tiny enough for me not to fit through, but they were small. And I went in to this ancient graveyard. And like some of the tombstones had trees that were clearly hundreds of years old, growing out of them, gnarled branches with these beautiful thick knots, twisted and turned all around inside each other. And that's what the whole graveyard was, filled with these old graves, which obviously held so much history and reverence. It's a really beautiful place to be. But I'd never have found that if I had gone out with intent or intention. You can find the best local restaurants when you go on a day in no direction as well. Again, I did the same when I went to Morocco last year for my birthday. I went walking around. I decided I was hungry. And now, to be fair, I actually did put in one thing into Google when I decided I was hungry, because I was in Morocco and I'm a woman on my own in Morocco. Now, you can do that, absolutely no bother. The people are lovely and they leave you alone. But I thought, okay, you know, I love local food. I really want to try something traditional. I don't want to be going to touristy places. So I stuck into Google food and looked for the places with the most reviews and found the name of the place with most reviews and looked at where I might find it. And then I put my phone away and I trusted the journey. So I went off and I walked about and I ended up going to a museum. And then I came out going looking for the food and I hit this side street again. Often the places that you'll find when you go on a day of no direction are down these side streets. And so I start going up this side street and next thing this man comes up to me. And in Tetouan in Morocco, it's not too far from the south of Spain. So they speak Spanish there as well. I've never been so glad. Well, a couple of times I've been very glad of my Spanish in different parts of the world, but this was one of them. So your man says to me in Spanish, am I looking for somewhere to eat? And I said, yeah. And he starts leading me down this path or down the side street. And I realised he's taking me to this like 3 or 4 star hotel. And I was like, no, 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 I'm not going there, man. I want to go for some proper, real local food. And I say the name of the place and he looks at me. Serio? I was like, yeah, this is where I want to go. I read that it's really good. So he brings me back and he points at it. And it's this tiny little pure Moroccan place, full of men, not a woman in the place. And immediately I thought, oh God, I probably shouldn't be going in here. I'm a woman, you know, like respecting the conventions of Islam and the religion of the country. I hesitated and the owner looked at me. Your man walked in, he said he was bringing me in for food. And I looked at the owner and I asked his permission to be in the place because I didn't want to be disrespectful. Yeah. So yeah, your man was grand. No, absolutely no bother. Sit down there yourself. The entire restaurant went pure silent. Every man in the place, and it had been full of life. Every one of them just looked at me. They didn't look at me nastily or anything like that. They just looked at me like, what the fuck is this woman doing in here? But they smiled and I sat down. No bother. And over the next few minutes, like, they started to talk to each other again. But I sat down and he brought me this incredible plate of food. All home cooked, different stews, meats and vegetables, and a big, beautiful thing of bread. And I sat and I ate my meal, and I think it cost me no more than €3. It was incredible. So going on a day of no direction can bring us not only back to ourselves, to trusting our inner selves and our inner compass and allowing ourselves to be guided by our own sense, but it can also lead us to our treasure. Sometimes it's a treasure we were searching for. Sometimes it's a treasure that we never knew we were looking for. Nearly 20 years ago, when I first read The Alchemist, my Bible, my Quran, I was on a beach in Andalusia, reading about the language of the universe, the language with no words, and experiencing the language without words. Reading the story about Santiago putting up the market stall in Tarifa in Africa, speaking Spanish, the guy speaking Arabic, and the two of them understanding each other. And since then, I have talked about and had experiences of this language without words and the language of the universe. And this evening, I was listening to another Blind Boy episode, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to talk about this now or not, because I talked about him at the beginning. And again, I don't want this to sound like I'm a fucking sycophant, but it's, look, stuff all links together in the most incredible ways. And the reason I came upon this fella in the first place was because of what he said about the Irish language. I was studying Spanish a few years ago, again, with a coach. and I was doing reflexives with her. I find reflexives really difficult because they switch the way we have to think from English and between English and Spanish. But we were doing this one form of the reflexive, and basically the way that it's spoken is that they would say things like, "Don't be dying on me. Don't be doing this to me." And as she was explaining it to me, and I can't say it to you in Spanish now because I can't remember the construction for it, but she was telling me this and I was like, but this is how we speak in English in Ireland, and it's related to the Irish language. We say things to people like, "Don't be dying on me now. Don't be doing that to me. Don't be doing that on me." It's like we put it upon the other person not to be putting a feeling upon ourselves, or not to be putting an action upon us. And it's exactly the same in the Spanish construct. So then this evening, I finally listened to his episode on the link between Irish music and North African drums or North African music. And as I'm listening to him, I'm thinking about when he's going through the history and talking about different things, I was thinking about this episode title and plan that I have for when I do more research on the Milesians, the group that are believed to have landed in Ireland and to be the ancient origins of the Irish from the Iberian Peninsula. And in fact, for me, when I think about the word Milchan, which is very similar in spelling in the Gaeilge, in the Irish language, Milchan is chocolate. And when you think about chocolate and the colour of chocolate and the colour of chocolate skin, for me, there must be a link in there, right? So why am I telling you all this? Because I got really excited listening to him talking about it this evening. And that's when my mind started thinking, oh my God, people are going to think that I'm copying him if I do an episode on this. But I was thinking about it before I even heard the episode. And then I was working through putting the notes together for all of this episode. And as I'm coming to the end of it and recognizing and realizing that releasing to our journey allows us to open up to so much more, I came to the end of writing the notes and recognized that being in Andalusia, I have come full circle. And it's today's not the first day that I realized I've come full circle, but I'm being reminded of it constantly recently. A few minutes ago, like I said, when I first read The Alchemist, I was on a beach in Andalusia and I was reading about Santiago and the language of the universe, and I've experienced it a few times since then. And then I was going to move to Andalusia. I was going to live here. I was ready to live here. Well, I thought I was ready to live here, but I wasn't. I decided or thought that I needed to go and search for my treasure elsewhere. And like Santiago, I found my way back to my treasure in Andalusia, where it was all along. And I was reminded of that today when I was sitting at my desk writing the article for LinkedIn. And I kept getting distracted. All day I kept getting distracted because spring is here. And where normally only at dusk the hawks, or I actually think they're kestrels, would fly, today they were flying all day. And they startled me into awareness of them way early on in the day when they were having a fight. And they kept distracting me all day, to the point where when I was in the middle of writing the article at one stage, one of them would just kept flying towards my window, and then he just, or she, I'm not sure, fly up above it and obviously land on the roof above me. And I burst into tears with joy. I found my way back to my treasure, or I found my way to my treasure, whatever way you want to look at it. I wasn't lost. I just took a few different routes along the way, enjoying the uniqueness of the journey and the spontaneity that came with it. And I'm really, really grateful, and I feel really blessed to have, if you want to call it getting lost, to have got lost, to have allowed myself to go on days of no direction, to have found all of the different things that I found along the journey, to have felt all the things that I felt along the journey, painful and positive, to have finally got my way to where I am today. My destination, I still don't know. I have ideas of where I'd like to go. I even have the house I want to live in and the gardens and everything drawn, hanging on my press in my house. That's the destination I'd like to get to. Have I any idea if I'll get there or not? No. Do I know that I'm going to go on a winding path along the way to achieving it or reaching it? Yeah. Am I excited about that journey? Absolutely. Will I get there? I don't know. Would I like to get there? Yeah. Am I set upon the destination and focused on the outcome? No. Because it really doesn't matter. There's a story of a disciple who told his guru that he was going to a far-off place to meditate and hopefully to attain enlightenment. So he sent the guru a note every 6 months to report the progress he was making. The first report said, "Now I understand what it means to lose the self." The guru tore up the note and threw it in the waste paper basket. After 6 months, he got another report which said, "Now I have attained sensitivity to all beings." He tore it up. Then a third report said, "Now I understand the secret of the one and the many." It too was torn up. And so it went on for years, until finally no reports came in. After a time, the guru became curious, and one day there was a traveller going to that far place. The guru said, "Why don't you find out what happened to that fellow?" Finally, he got a note from his disciple. It said, "What does it matter?" And when the guru read that, he said, "He made it. He made it. He finally got it. He got it." Stop trying to push yourself somewhere. Then, someday you'll understand that simply by awareness, you have already attained what you were pushing yourself toward. Today, as I reflected on the kestrels flying over me, and I felt the abundance and the joy and the gratitude at what being where I am and all the people who'd helped me to get here, I wrote some words. It took me 20 years to get here. I didn't know if ever I would. My direction didn't always seem clear, but the stars always knew that I could find my way out of anything, no matter how hard it seemed. The destination always awaits us, as long as we don't give up on our dreams. I stopped trying to push myself anywhere. Then one day, I understood that simply by awareness, I had already attained what I was pushing myself toward. I am gifted with where I get to live, with where I've chosen to have my life. I didn't get here alone, but it took me looking inside, becoming aware but not forcing awareness, trusting my instincts, recalibrating my compass and heeding my GPS to get to where I am. You can do it too. As the disciple, let go. Pick up a piece of paper and let it float in the wind. Or actually maybe a feather. We don't need any more pollution. Kajianke there, Ella. Thanks for listening. Until next time. Vanakti. Agus Buekas. Did you find Garsveen?
I did. Oh my goodness, it's such a beautiful place. Thank you so much.
No bother, no. Come on, we go down and have a pint of Guinness.